All right, welcome to our NBA podcast for Tuesday, November 29th. I am on a moderate tilt, Doug Norrie, and that is...
James Davis. This is our third attempt at getting through the open, and I think we've got it, buddy.
I'm trying my best. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started or continue winning on FanDuel or DraftKings. You can head over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which will help you put together lineups for both FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Wildly successful basketball season this year, looking to keep it going on that end, and if you need any proof in the pudding, just head over to the site and jump into the chat room, which is going pretty much 24/7 all day long, talking NFL, talking NBA, and you can just ask, hey, is anyone here a premium member? And people will give you their honest answers, and that's really the best sales pitch that we can have. So DFSR.com, head over, grab a free 3-day trial, and you'll be all set. All right, we took a week off last week because of the holidays with some travel and whatnot, so we're back into the, putting together NBA lineups during that time, but we were just not recording podcasts. So we're a little, and I'm not going to say we're out of practice, but hey, buddy, it's good to be back on the air talking NBA.
Yeah, man. Long time gone, and we're still here.
So it's so funny because we talk, you and I talk NBA just about every single night, except that we just don't always record it. This is us when we're putting in lineups. So, it feels like old hat, but hey, when the record button hits, sometimes it takes you 6 to 7 tries to get the opening right. So we have a Tuesday in basketball. I had a really hard time writing the picks last night, mostly because this slate has one very interesting DFS game in it, which is New Orleans and the Lakers, and then a bunch of just teams you generally want to avoid. Like you have some blowout issues with the Clippers and the Nets. You have some potential blowout issues with the Spurs and the Magic. You have some slow teams with the Jazz. What was your general thoughts on just like the kind of the day in general when you took a look at the system and you took a look at the projections?
Yeah, it's just, on one hand, tough slates like this, it always feels bad. The lineups never look that good because, there's so many unknown variables and, trying to keep a lot of balls in the air with blowouts and, unknown injury situations and all that kind of thing. But I think we often find that nights that feel the worst, our system winds up doing the best because everyone is struggling with it. And so if you're sitting there and you're like, man, I just can't find two good fat power forward plays, but you have a good one and a decent one, you just know that there are people out there who never found the decent one, and I think that just leads to a pretty significant edge. I think there's more variance, normally, of course, we would always like to play good players everywhere and safe situations and fast paced games and all that kind of thing. But I think there's still plenty of edge to be had here.
No, for sure. That's a good point about how you feel about something. Because there was a couple instances last week where we were putting in lineups and I was like, man, this feels terrible. And then one of the top DraftKings, I think the top DraftKings lineup that we were pushing out through our system came in third in a GBP or something like that. So
exactly.
So it was like a $1,800 cash or somewhere in that range. So
on the $30 buy-in.
For my $30 buy-in. So on that one particular tournament. So yeah, no, you're right. It does happen, and if it feels bad for us, I suspect that it feels bad sort of for everybody. Let's go to point guards.
Well, because the one thing too, and I think it's worth noting too, just changing in process. When it used to feel bad, so when we first started doing this casually before we started a company around it, whenever that was, early 2012 or 2013, when things would feel bad, mostly because it was because we hadn't done our research, right? We just didn't realize that a small forward had, was going to get the start. And then you get there and you're like, oh man, look at that. This guy started. These days, when it feels bad for us anyway, it's not because we're missing a guy. That doesn't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to brag or anything. That's just the way the process is and the fact that we can do this full time. And so I think that's actually where the edge comes from. If you're a casual player and you're just not kind of paying attention and it feels bad, you shouldn't put a lineup in. But if you are someone who's dedicated to it, or you have a system like ours, which has dedicated people, updating projections 16 hours a day, basically, then I think you do fine on slates like this. So that's just a quick aside before we move in.
No, you're right. And it does speak to the old, I sometimes feel the bad I feel is when it is either a lot of the top lineups have a lot of differences in them, which is usually to me a bad sign that things are really, really close among the projections. And that can be a sort of a warning sign, or it can just be that it's jamming in. The system's kind of jamming in kind of losers at cheap prices because it just can't figure out who some of these pump plays are. Sometimes these things crystallize. This is before noon on Tuesday, so things always, in NBA, we always warn people, don't put in a lineup. You really can't put in a lineup until the last hour at minimum, right? Because just NBA news comes so fast and furious, especially in that time leading up to lock. So if you're putting in your lineups at noon, just know that there's it's likely and should change before you get to that before you get to that final lock.
I'll go further. You can't win if you put your lineups in at noon.
Oh no, so you're totally dead. So okay, let's start with point guard. You know, I started with point guard and I had the two Pelicans guys going against the Lakers. That was Frazier and Holiday. You know, Holiday is a little bit worrisome only because he has a minutes cap, it appears, right now. I think they've actually even come out and said it. He's right around that 30 to 31 minute. You know, he's really not exceeding that. I think the one game he did, that game might have gone to overtime. But they are playing Frazier and Holiday together on the court, which I did not think was going to happen. I thought Frazier would take a backseat to the ball handling duties, but they've been playing sort of like a one and two guard combinations with those two. Do you think you can run both of those guys out together in cash games considering the matchup in the Lakers?
Yeah, I mean, so they both have their own warts, right? Like, Frazier's usage has gone down significantly with Holiday back, and actually being on the court with Holiday doesn't do wonders for that usage either. I think it's possible. I mean, I think this mostly speaks to just how tough the slate is at point guard tonight, because neither of them has been reliably paying their points per dollar price. So when you play him in this spot, you're basically looking at this and saying, you know, unless you want to play Jose Calderon at a few dollars, or, you know, who's played 12 minutes last game,
right?
You know, like, unless you want to just really go off the reservation, or maybe like you get the word that Isaiah Whitehead's going to start, you know, there's all these sorts of different considerations that you have. So a long story short is I don't really want to play both of these guys, to be honest with you, but I guess I would reluctantly given some of the other missing options tonight.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? It's like you look at the lineups and you see a guy like Whitehead. I mean, we have Whitehead right around that 28 to 29 minute sort of, you know, a territory, because it's really tough to trust Brooklyn in terms of what they do and in their rotations and whatnot. But he's just so cheap, and if a guy like that is going to be the minimum price and out on the court for 28 to 29 minutes, I mean, I sort of hate to do it, but then you just kind of need that salary relief, because if you look sort of in other price tiers, you get guys like Kemba Walker. I don't know about that. That's the matchup against Detroit. They're super slow. You get Kyrie. I guess
I like the Kyrie pick, actually. You didn't include him in the write-up last night.
I should have. I'm realizing.
At 7,600, you know, he's been paying that price fairly reliably, you know, getting up in that 5X range when he gets his minutes. And this is a tighter spread than usual for them. So I think Kyrie actually is a very, very solid option tonight.
Yeah, I had written up Chris Paul, and I kind of, not that I regret it, because they're around the same points per dollar, at least on FanDuel for our system, for Paul and Irving. You know, Paul, you have the risk of the blowout. It stands, they've been playing great defense. It feels like it's going to be difficult for the Nets to score at all against the Clippers. And then you start running into some blowout issues where you maybe don't have that with Irving as much. You know, they're -7.5 on the road in Milwaukee. If those two, you know, considering they're the same points per dollar, I guess you could probably, Irving would be the better pivot just because he's a little cheaper and the blowout risk is a little bit less than it is for the Clippers tonight.
Yeah, I'm with that.
You know, and overlapping into that shooting guard, point guard territory is Giannis. And he's a guy, you know, against Cleveland's a good defensive team. So we typically don't want to roster players against them because they're a good defensive team. They don't really play particularly fast. Giannis, though, tonight, he kind of fits two different needs in that he's not too terribly expensive. I mean, he's actually gone up to 10,000-ish on FanDuel, which is really probably getting up toward the tip of his range. But figuring that, in general, Cleveland, not that great against, let's call him a point guard on some plays and a shooting guard on others. He kind of just runs.
Yeah, small forward.
Right. Yeah, he's a hard guy to pin down when you kind of do defensive versus position metrics, because he's actually a good example of why those stats can be tricky and why we try to smooth them out in our system. I mean, we definitely use those stats, but we're not too over-reliant on them only because a guy like Giannis, like you agree with me here, like a guy like Giannis causes like significant issues with those kind of stats.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like if you look at the Cavs, for instance, they're the fourth worst team against at defending point guards this season. He's not going to get covered by Kyrie Irving, so you can just throw that right out the window. As far as who's actually going to cover him, maybe LeBron. I mean, and it's not a terrific matchup for sure. But I think like when you look at Cleveland and you look at how they're defending teams this season. They've actually been a little looser than they have been in the past. You know, they are playing the 11th fastest pace this season. Defensive efficiency is 103. So, you know, not bad, but, you know, more like in that league average sort of territory. So it's just basically a regular matchup. Really, the big deciding factor when you're playing Cleveland is, will your team get blown out or not? And being a 7.5-point dog, while not ideal, is not like Vegas is penciling this in for a slam dunk blowout or anything like that.
Right. And so Giannis ends up becoming at a shooting guard position that is very difficult to sort of fill, at least at this point in the day. I mean, you can't really play Harden against the Jazz because the pace is just simply too slow. And most even novice DFS players realize that at this point, playing a player against the Jazz is just such a significant pace downgrade. And after him, I mean, really, some of the names here, like Batum against Detroit, I don't know. You have the Lakers sort of mishmash of Williams and Clarkson, but both those guys come off the bench. How safe do you think guys like Clarkson and Williams are, considering they don't project to start and they really haven't been starting, but they still get minutes off the bench? Like, how much does that worry you?
Yeah, normally I need a good reason to play a bench guy, and normally that good reason is it's a very short slate and the other options are terrible. Right. Like, I'd look at a guy like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, for instance, and it's just, we're talking strictly for cash games here, but Pope, you know, mostly been up this season, you know, occasional down games. He was batting against Oklahoma City, and I suspect the short memory of DFS players will consider that on some level, but, you know, in the same price range, not a great matchup with Charlotte for sure, but I would definitely prefer to play him over backups like Williams and Clarkson, just from a strict safety perspective.
Right, that's the issue, right, is because we see this happen all the time, where a guy, this happened with James Johnson just last night. James Johnson is consistently in that 30-minute or so range, but he's coming off the bench, and you really need to hope that the rotations and the matchups line up for him, because there's much better chance of him getting buzzed off in minutes, which is what happened last night, than greatly exceeding that 30-minute that 30 minutes of run. And that's the issue with guys like Williams and Clarkson, is that, you know, Walton could just see something he likes early on with Calderon. I don't know how. Calderon's terrible, but we've seen this happen.
Yeah, but he makes a few 3-pointers. Right. They just lose 4 minutes like that. And the other thing too is that when you're not playing, like, each minute lost, if you're playing, say you're Joel Embiid, right? Embiid plays 25 minutes for most times. Now, if he goes out there and plays just 20 minutes, that's a much bigger difference than if Caldwell-Pope goes from like 38 to 33 minutes. And so Embiid's not a great example. He starts, he's going to get his minutes just because he's on this minutes cap thing. But when we look at guys like Williams or Clarkson or, you know, James Johnson, bench guys are the first guys to lose minutes when weird game scripts break out. And I would much rather play guys just from a strict safety perspective that are more guaranteed their minutes. Nothing's a guarantee in the NBA, but, you know, you can do better or worse depending on which situation you decide to err on the side of.
I'd love to play a guy like Rodney Hood, too, with a big pace upgrade against the Rockets tonight, but his minutes have been a little suspect also as their backcourt gets a little healthier and they've been exploring some different rotations, getting Exum in there a little bit more. They'll play Joe Johnson sort of rotating kind of all over the place on the court, so Hood is a guy that if I knew he was going to be back to that 35-minute or so range, then I'd be kind of all systems go on his price, but you just can't trust the minutes for him at this point. So shooting guard, I would say as of right now, kind of a mess. hopefully things maybe shake out a little bit during the day. Kilpatrick's another guy, but again, the Brooklyn situation is they're another team that just don't want to play their guys more than 29 minutes a game, no matter who
they are. Well, sure, and they have the second lowest point differential in the league. They're a 13-point dog tonight. You also got Danny Green, I think, would be a reasonable play. He's super cheap. Always love to escape a bad position cheaply, but the Spurs are 13-point favorites against the hapless Magic, so this position really is tough.
Well, this is just the theme for the day, too, because you have so many teams. Like, the Magic are another good example. They just don't know. I mean, Frank Vogel's basically said, I don't know what I'm doing here with these lineups. Like, I'm just trying all these different things. Like, you know, they move Vucevic to the bench, and then they bring in DJ Augustine and start him, and Biombo, and they start him, and he's basically just said, I'm trying to explore different options. When you get a team like them, the Nets, the Lakers, you know, these, I mean, Milwaukee's tough to trust with minutes sometimes. You get just, if that's half the slate, then you're really in a minutes kind of quagmire sort of all the way down. So I don't know. This is just speaks to just the uncertainty kind of going in, at least this early in the day. At small forward, I wrote up Kawhi, and he and LeBron, to me, I mean, I wrote up Kawhi mostly because of price. Like, I think that it's fine to sort of save $1,300 on him, considering what you maybe can get throughout the rest of the lineup, lacking a good punt. But LeBron, I could see sort of being a chalk play just because the dude's just like so consistent this season. Even sort of when he misses, he can't miss. I mean, who do you see as more like the safe cash game play here?
Yeah, I would say LeBron is probably the safer cash game play. Cleveland just has a more reliable game plan in my estimation. And, you know, the prices, while they're not the same, are at least comparable. And so while Kawhi has excellent points per dollar upside, like he certainly can touch 50 fantasy points in a game, he can also touch 25 fantasy points in a game and no one is stunned. Like, the Spurs are a lot more cautious on guarding guys on minutes. I actually wrote about this in LeBron's write-up against Philadelphia, but, you know, we've seen plenty of times where Cleveland, they're just not going to throw a game away. Like, they smell blood in the water in that Philly game. It wound up being close. But LeBron had a triple-double and 55 fantasy points against one of the league's worst teams. And so in a game that rates to be a little bit closer, I think you can count on LeBron to play high 30s minutes. The guy's indestructible, and the coach never feels the need to rest him. So these are all famous last words, by the way. Whenever I start throwing hyperbole around, it always comes back to bite me. But no, I simply just view him as arguably the safest, if the least exciting, big money play on most nights, and especially on nights with a lot of uncertainty like this.
And I think that's where you see him sort of creep to the top of the list, is that he is just safe. Like, the floor is so high, and he just creates his points in so many different ways that it's really hard for him to have a terrible game, right? Like, you can see it sometimes can happen with some of these high money guys. You can have terrible games because if they're so scoring dependent or whatever, or you get into the centers where they're so rebounding dependent, there's the ball can bounce a couple different ways for you, and now you're suddenly looking at a 3x night instead of 5. LeBron can just figure it out in so many different ways that, yeah, the floor is there. It probably
he gets the assists even when other guys are going off. Like, he just does it in so many different ways.
He's incentivized to get guys like Kyrie and especially Love going early, which helps him. So on the cheaper side of things at small forward, I mean, you have got, again, this is another issue. We have Brandon Ingram. He's been playing some minutes, but it's unclear sometimes where the Lakers are going to go. What about a guy like Aaron Gordon? It's a bad matchup against the Spurs, but he started last game. I suspect he starts again. He was so bad from the field. Like, he's so cheap. What do you think of a guy like Aaron Gordon?
Yeah, actually, I think I really like Aaron Gordon this week. This not the NFL podcast anymore, James. Come on. You can do this, man.
Pull together, buddy.
All right. Yeah, so you mentioned Gordon's field goal percentage was shooting 0-for-12 from the field is going to be like a ridiculous aberration for him, for a guy who plays close to the basket and, you know, has put up great numbers as a starter in the past. The fact that he's just 4,100, I think, also mitigates some of the blowout risk here. The issue is that, I mean, we talked about this. Like, I just had to call you in disbelief when they randomly started Augustine and Bielmo over Vucevic and Payton, where we were just like, does it not matter who the coach is? Is this just an organizational philosophy of screwing with guys' minutes? Like, is this coming down from the owner being like, whatever you do, no one needs to be safe, you know? Like, no one needs to, like, I just simply don't understand what they're up to on a night-to-night basis.
You mentioned that because this was a big issue with Scott Skiles last year when he was the coach. Yes. So, like, so if you're new to this idea behind the Magic's uncertainty, Scott Skiles was, I mean, one of the biggest centers when it came to this kind of thing last season. And you're like, okay, they get Vogel in here. This is going to be a change. Nope. So anyway, yeah, go ahead.
A change. Right. So it drives me completely insane. I think if you're judging between him and Ingram, like, it's hard to say. Like, I think Gordon objectively has more upside because we've just seen like huge 40 plus fantasy point performances from him in the past. Whereas Ingram in this current incarnation of himself is a lot more, he's just not as present in the offense. He has been rebounding more lately, which is a good sign, but normally not considered a plus rebounder for the position. Doesn't pass at all. Doesn't really play a lot of defense. So, we've seen some good performances out of Ingram. I think, you know, if he does get out there and play 30, 35 minutes, 5X seems like an easy one for him. I just think that Gordon has more upside. So take it for what it's worth. But I like both plays, I should say. You know, this is one position where I could see going double cheap. I could see sprinkling in Kawhi or LeBron, or going double expensive if we get better punts. But this position actually looks quite strong to me.
Yeah, I could see also people talking themselves into Gordon Hayward, which I actually don't mind. Also against the Rockets, if you think that's going to be just kind of an upgrade from them in that game. Like, you're not going to see you're not going to see Utah too many times having around, you know, three-digit 100-point implied totals, which they do have tonight. So I could see Hayward being a guy. He's had some hand issues, which worried me a little bit about the shooting, though. He's been able to score in the short term. There are a couple guys in this price range this will be, I can see ownership being sort of spread out among some of these guys tonight. Right. When it's all said and done at power forward, Kaminsky is still going to start. I think he's going to be the chalk play. He was pretty chalky last night with Marvin Williams still out. He's been starting. He's been fine. The price really hasn't climbed to meet sort of that new opportunity. He's still shooting in the offense. Do you see him as the most popular power forward play tonight?
I think so. I don't see any reason why he would go in the other direction. I think people have kind of expected him to be something more than solid on these current prices, and he's kind of just been dwindling in the solid range. I actually think he might be due for sort of a breakout performance. We've seen like a bad shooting performance held him back in that first Knicks game, but he still had 9 rebounds and 4 assists and so on. Then in the next game, he was merely good in 35 minutes against the Knicks, and then wasn't quite as good against Memphis, but he also lost 5 minutes there thanks to the blowout. So I think we actually could be gearing up for a big Kaminsky game at some point, and while he's still cheap and while Marvin Williams is still out, I think that's just an excellent situation to just cash in on a guy that is going to have high ownership, but also should. So,
and I think you'll see his salary and maybe some of the other cheap guys I mentioned make way for a guy like Davis tonight. Like I said, the New Orleans facing the Lakers is one of the juicier fantasy matchups tonight. Davis is getting real expensive, $12,000 on FanDuel, a little bit less on DraftKings. Now, it's funny because when Drew Holiday came back, I think some of the concern was he was going to maybe lose a little bit of usage because Holiday is sort of a ball first point guard and will shoot. But what's actually happened is it just made the Pelicans a better team. And so, yes, like, they're staying in games better. Like, they've won 4 of the last 6 games. And Holiday, for whatever maybe he takes away from Davis and usage, I mean, Davis has still seen plenty of shots, but now the Pelicans are just a significantly better team, which is crazy when one player, I mean, this just speaks to how the difference between the sub replacement level backup point guard / shooting guard play they were getting out of their other guys before, that switch up to Holiday just makes a huge difference for them. Do you think Davis is the most highly owned big money guy tonight, considering the matchup and just sort of like what he's been doing?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, the track record always helps, and people have that short memory in DFS, whether or not people are going to be able to afford him or they're going to settle in on more a guy in like LeBron's price range. I couldn't say 100% right now. I do suspect that since power forward is generally worse, that he might wind up being there. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting on Davis because we always talk about, you and I, like internally and on the podcast from time to time, how really this all comes down to projecting opportunity, right? Like, by and large, NBA players are pretty much what NBA players are, at least compared to other sports. Like, it's very unusual for a guy, like in baseball, a random guy can come up and hit 350 for a season, right? Like, that just happens from time to time. In basketball, random dudes who had 4 rebounds last year don't have 12 this year. It just never happens. And so if you get a decent sense for a guy's baseline, then you really just need to figure out the matchup and the opportunity. And an underrated thing for Davis is Holiday being around and them being better has just given him more opportunity. You know, he's averaged 37 minutes a game this season. In the last 5 games, he's averaged more than, well, there was, again, the blowout, but they were on the good side of the blowout against Atlanta. But non-blowout games recently, he's topping 40 minutes. Like, he's just playing a 40-minute rotation, and that really helps. I mean, getting an extra 10%, 8% of minutes on a guy like him means huge production, and this is probably an appropriate price for him.
Right, and just better possessions with Holiday on the court. So,
of course, yeah.
That's the case for him. Again, the Lakers are still a great team to match up against in DFS. They play at a fast pace. They're generally not that good in defensive efficiency. They're going to have some matchup problems with him just in general with personnel. You know, Julius Randle, I don't know if he's going to play again. Larry Nance is an interesting guy on the cheap, though. Good luck figuring out the Lakers' minute rotations, because when we think Nance is going to play, he goes like 19 and 17 minutes, and then last game goes 30. So I just don't know what you really do with the Lakers minutes at this point. Sort of what we end up doing in our system is sort of hedging them across the board, because, and then kind of, you know, nobody ends up being that good, sort of, because you just can't. Now, again, they make for great tournament plays, because then the games where you do get a Nance 30-minute game, he's a phenomenal value. But you can't run the risk of getting the 18-minute game because, you know, Walton didn't like what he was seeing or whatever, or there's foul trouble or just whatever it is, and now you're really, really kind of buzzed. So I think also you see maybe Kevin Love being a popular play just because he's so much cheaper, and he's been good in the short term as well. It's just in general this year, he's shooting just sort of lights out from 3. So power forward, I don't know, ends up always kind of becoming the position I least like to fill, and especially on FanDuel where we have to do 2 of them. All right, let's finish off with center. Center, this is the theme for the whole day. I just kind of, I looked at these plays last night and I looked at the points per dollar on some of these players and I just didn't know what to do. And I don't know if you can like lend some clarity here to the center position. Is there someone that's kind of jumping out for you on this list?
Yeah, actually, center is a position, and I don't know if you wrote these guys up last night, but our system is calling guys to the forefront this morning where I think you can maybe go cheap somewhat more reliably than you can go expensive. So the guy I'm looking at particularly is John Henson. I don't know if I'll actually get the start tonight, but he was terrific in his game against Orlando, which admittedly is a much better matchup. But, you know, gets out there, he scores 20 and 7, chips in 3 blocks and a steal. He's a guy who's had some fantasy success in the past. And while I don't know that he would be like a lock to put up 38 fantasy points again if he did start, he's a solid points per minute guy, you know, strong rebounder, pretty solid on the defensive end, and a direction I could see going if he winds up finding his way into the starting lineup again.
Yeah, I looked at him for a while and I had the same thought. It was like, if I knew for a fact that he was going to get out there for 25, maybe a little bit more minutes, then I'd be totally, totally fine with it. But he just, again, falls into that category of you just simply can't trust. Like Jason Kidd's been a big problem with this in the past also. It's like, these guys just when you're at the whim or the flight of fancy of your coach, he just is there. Now again, you run. It's a little bit easier to stomach when the guy is cheap, like he is, and so
yeah. And if he starts, like I think if the word comes out that he's coming off the bench, you don't touch him. Like he got a DNP CD the other day,
right?
And you just can't rely on it for sure. And well, another guy. I don't know if this is any better for you, but what about Cody Zeller? I mean, Zeller hasn't been playing a ton of minutes. But he's been solid on his production, right? 23 and 25 minutes in those two Knicks games, averaging 28 fantasy points on that time period, which would be terrific production on this price.
Yeah, he's not bad. You know, Drummond's not a great one-on-one defender, just in general. Like, he's more of like an off-the-ball sort of rebounding.
Yeah, help defender.
Help defender, but he just isn't great. He's just not great in the post in terms of just like bodying a specific guy up. But I don't mind him. Again, it's the minutes thing. These guys all fall into the minutes problem, right? Like, Paul Gasol is the same way. Like, I really kind of like Gasol if I knew he was going to be out there for close to 30, but you just can't really trust it. So I think in the end the system really likes DeAndre Jordan also, but again, you know, 32 minutes might be at the high end if this game's really over pretty quickly against the Nets. And so
yeah.
So I think going cheap in these situations generally is the way to go when it's just uncertain. Actually, maybe playing a mix of, you know, the John Hensons and the Cody Zellers. I mean, I can't believe the Bismack Biyombo took 0 shots last game, but I mean, who can grab a rebound here and there. Getting a little mix of all those guys and sort of just hedging across a couple different players on a smaller slate, that doesn't seem like the worst idea in the world to me. It's going to be really hard to make a case to pay up at center, though, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably right on. You know, Rudy Gobert is a guy you might want to consider just from an upside perspective. Like, he will top high 30s, even touching 40 minutes from time to time. Solid matchup against Houston, but it's a quagmire, no doubt.
All right, that's it for us today. We are from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. You can head over to the site, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Labs, which helps you put together our lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NBA. That subscription package also includes NFL as well, so it all falls under the same umbrella. It's free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month after that. Hey, buddy, good luck with NBA tonight.
Thanks, buddy. Adios.